You're listening to New Hampshire Now.
Welcome back here on New Hampshire Now with 914-15 and ConcordNewsRadio.com. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the program. This hour of New Hampshire Now is presented by the Prescription Center, and this segment of the show brought to you by Paradigm Plumbing, Heat, and Air Conditioning. That's who my family trusts to call for all our plumbing, heat, and air conditioning needs. Paradigm Plumbing, Heat, and Air Conditioning. Experience the Paradigm Shift. Check them out at ParadigmPH.com. While we begin our time in D.C., a lot of the action this week is actually going to be in New York, where the U.N. General Assembly is taking place, and President Trump will be addressing the U.N. General Assembly tomorrow. And I'm going to be joined on the program right now by former U.N. Ambassador John Bolton, who is in New York. Ambassador Bolton, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate joining us for the show. Well, we'll start off with what you're expecting from President Trump in addressing the U.N. General Assembly. And this may not be a huge deal to most Americans, but this is why this is important to me. This is something that is going to be viewed, I think, very, very closely across the world, both by allies and adversaries, the tone and tenor. And I think in terms of Donald Trump's foreign policy and international standing, this is, if not his most significant, one of his most significant speeches.
Well, I think it is, and that's why I think it will be a pretty straightforward foreign policy speech. In other words, I don't expect it to be a campaign-style rally. I don't kind of speech. I don't think he could sustain that. You know, when George W. Bush used to come to the United Nations each year, he'd say, he'd refer to it as his annual trip to the Wax Museum, because the audience isn't exactly lively. So the president has a number of issues he should use this forum to address, particularly the North Korean and Iranian nuclear weapons programs, as well as his effort for peace in the Middle East. I mean, he has a lot of substance to address. And if he focuses on that, questions of UN reform and so on, then I think he'll have delivered a substantive policy address that people can agree or disagree with, but it won't be out of the ordinary from what they've seen at the UN before.
Do you expect him to strike a more nationalist tone, or do you think with Bannon and Gorka outside the White House now, and seems like General Kelly, General McMaster, and General Mattis having his ear on national security issues, that this is going to be more of a recognizable American foreign policy?
Well, I don't think you can tell at this point.
Right.
I mean, as I suspect, I think that the speech will be, as they like to say at the State Department, anodyne. Because anodyne, which means basically not very interesting,
right,
is the safest way to get through an event like this. And so from that perspective, if you're really speaking to the American people, you would use a different form. And in this context, people all over the country will be watching, as you rightly say. People all over the world will be watching. So I expect it not to have any real noticeable sharp points. I could be wrong on that. Certainly in President Bush's various visits, he made some pretty tough points. But my guess is it will be pretty unexceptional from a Trump speech point of view.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot like his first address to the joint session of Congress, where it was toned down for him, and it focused on, you know, just getting a message across and what he wanted to accomplish. I think that's going to be basically what you're describing, where he's going to hit on key points across the world and be bland by what we, you know, generally expect from Donald Trump. But one of the most significant issues, if not the most significant, facing our nation right now is what's going on in North Korea. And you've talked a lot about this and the nature of this threat. How do you assess how the White House has handled this so far, and how do you assess the nature of the threat?
Well, I think the fact is that the rhetoric of the administration has been a lot tougher on North Korea than certainly the Obama administration. But curiously, the reality of the policy is not that different.
Correct.
From the Obama administration. I mean, even yesterday, on Face the Nation, Secretary of State Tillerson said, you know, our policy is based on four no's: no regime change, no regime collapse, no accelerated reunification of the two Koreas, and we're not seeking a reason to send our forces north of the DMZ. And he goes on, and then he concludes by saying, all of this is designed to bring North Korea to the table for constructive, productive dialogue. That's the Obama administration mm-hmm. policy. And, you know, it was Bush 43, and it was Clinton, too, for 25 years, and it failed. Very interestingly, this morning, your listeners may want to take a look at an op-ed that the Prime Minister of Japan, Shinzo Abe, wrote in the New York Times this morning. I was quite surprised by the tone that Abe took, and he's a friend of the United States, so it's something, obviously, he's in the region. He's very concerned about North Korea. He said this in the op-ed. Now, compare this to what I just read from what our Secretary of State said. The Prime Minister of Japan said, more dialogue with North Korea would be a dead end. And then he goes on to say he's reaffirming the ironclad Japan-United States alliance, that they're coordinating with us in lockstep. And he says, I firmly support the United States' position that all options are on the table. Now, in the language of a Japanese prime minister, that's as close as you get as in public to saying we're prepared to use military force against North Korea. And as I say, more dialogue with North Korea would be a dead end. Maybe the Secretary of State should talk to Prime Minister Abe.
Yeah, and I think, as I've mentioned before, those are the individuals whose lead we should be following, individuals who are in relative proximity to North Korea. And that's been one of the, you know, the concerns that I've had, particularly in regards to the fire and fury comment from President Trump, and Senator McCain mentioned this as well. And when your rhetoric, as you referenced also, when your rhetoric is different than your policy, that's where there's a problem. And if you make certain statements in using that rhetoric, you have to be prepared to back them up. And obviously, we've seen after those comments continued aggression from North Korea.
Well, that's right. They think that they are close to the finish line, and I define the finish line as having a ballistic missile capability to drop thermonuclear warheads on any target in the continental United States. I don't think they're there yet, but I think they're getting close, maybe next year. They're certainly more advanced, as we've seen in the past 3 or 4 months, than a lot of people thought. And, you know, history didn't begin on January the 20th of this year when the president was sworn in. History didn't begin for him. History didn't begin for his advisors. We've had 25 years of efforts through a combination of what the State Department likes to call carrots and sticks, persuasion and coercion, to get North Korea to give up their nuclear weapons program. They have not taken a single step to give up that program. And this close to the finish line, they're not about to at this point. So you've really got two choices, it seems to me, eliminate the weapons capability or eliminate the regime. And I think what people in the United States should be asking themselves, let's look at the point when this current crisis is over, a month from now, 6 months from now, whatever it is, a year from now. I believe if North Korea still has a nuclear weapons capability, we have lost. I agree with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Dunford, who was asked a couple of weeks ago, isn't it unimaginable to conceive of a military strike against North Korea? And he said, no, it's not unimaginable. Mm-hmm. That's my job. That's what I'm doing. What's unimaginable, he said, is to leave North Korea with the nuclear capability. And I think that's the right assessment.
Right. I mean, there's only a certain amount of time that you can go with, trying to work through diplomatic measures and trying to find alternative, endings to this. And that's the concern. And my other thing is that you will hear administration officials or others mention that, we may act preemptively. In your view, How good is our intelligence to be able to act preemptively? In other words, right before there were to be some sort of a nuclear strike, say, against California or the West Coast, do we have the ability to infiltrate and to act preemptively, just prior to a nuclear strike? And of course, there's also the potential for Guam or other nations that are closer to North Korea. Or does preemptively mean the only preemptive strike, one that in which we go in and take out the regime?
Well, I would call it more preventative. I don't think you want to wait till the last minute.
Right.
Obama really gutted our national missile defense capability. We have some. I'm a big advocate of national missile defense. I think our technological capabilities are state of the art, although they obviously could be improved. The fact is we just don't have enough capability. We don't have the layered missile defense that Bush 43 sought. So I think you've got to go in earlier. I think our intelligence tells us a lot about where their nuclear sites are, where their ballistic missile sites are, where their submarine bases are, because we certainly don't want them to have a submarine launch capability, you know, that they're out in the Pacific Ocean somewhere and we have no idea where. The risk, of course, when you go after even the limited effort to destroy the nuclear program is North Korean retaliation against South Korea. And I think this risk demonstrates what a terrorist government North Korea is, because they're talking quite openly, and this is what they've been preparing for, launching artillery attacks on the northern suburbs of Seoul. There aren't military facilities there. These are innocent civilians. This is a terrorist regime. The nuclear capability is terrorist capability, and they're talking about killing their own fellow Koreans in response to our attack. So obviously any attack has to do whatever is possible to reduce or eliminate North Korea's retaliatory capability. That's what makes it complicated. It also means that if you're going to get ready for it, you need to get ready for it well in advance. For example, by saying sooner rather than later, we want all dependent personnel, all spouses and children of American diplomatic and military personnel in South Korea withdrawn. Do it calmly, do it in an orderly fashion, but get them out, because this could go on for weeks or months. You don't want to telegraph the moment that the strike might come. And I think if there is any chance of getting North Korea's attention or China's attention, which really holds the key here, it's by demonstrating just how serious the threat is. Rhetoric alone, I think you mentioned before, rhetoric alone is not going to do it and risks undercutting the president's credibility going forward.
In conclusion, briefly, should we be working side by side, in your view, with Prime Minister Abe and the South Koreans? As you mentioned, the Chinese are kind of, I'd like to see them as have a more significant role here, but I don't know how possible that is. Or should this be United States sets the policy and everyone follows behind us?
Well, look, the duty of the President of the United States is to protect innocent Americans. I mean, I personally care deeply about the South Korean civilian population. The President of South Korea takes a much softer line, or at least he did before getting the recent education he's getting in exactly what the North Korean regime is like. I think we've got to work with South Korea and Japan. But ultimately, the question for the President, for our President, is how many dead Americans are you prepared to risk in dealing with North Korea? And my answer is quite straightforward, none. So I think we've got to do what we need to do. I think this op-ed by Shinzo Abe in today's New York Times is pretty clearly saying he's right there with us, because his job is to protect innocent Japanese civilians from this regime threat. So I think we're at the end of a 25-year history here. The options are not good. But you can't deny the reality that we failed for 25 years to stop North Korea, and that's where we are.
As always, appreciate you joining us for the program.
Well, thanks for having me.
That is Ambassador John Bolton here on Hampshire Now. 1-9-1450 and ConcordNewsRadio.com. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the show. This hour of it brought to you by the Prescription Center and that segment of the program presented by Paradigm Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Check them out at ParadigmPH.com.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now.
Eastern world. It is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Don't you understand what I'm trying to say? Can't you feel the fears I'm feeling today? If the button is pushed, there's no running away. There'll be no one to save with the world in a grave. Take a look around you, boy. It's bound to scare you, boy. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. my blood so mad, feels like coagulating. I'm sitting here just contemplating. I can't twist the truth, it knows no regulation. Handful of senators don't pass legislation, and marches alone can't bring integration. When human respect is disintegrating, this whole crazy world is just too frustrating. And you tell me over and over and over again, my